one. Can y'all hear me? Give me a thumbs up if you can hear me. Okay, great. My name's Hampton Shattuck, or Hampton S, sorry. And I am from Washington, D.C., and will be chairing the meeting. Before we start the meeting, I'm going to do a couple of just announcements. I don't know which order I'm supposed to do this, but anyways, first, please note that lost badges cannot be replaced. Please keep your badge with you all times. If you lose your badge, I'm adding this, go to lost and found. There is a reserved seating area in the main meeting room for volunteers, trusted servants, and staff. Since this might be busy with their work and assignments, please honor that and refrain from attempting to sit in the areas, in the reserve areas. Elevator is limited and needed for scooters and strollers. Please do not use the elevators if you can use the escalators. The Lost and Found is located in the convention information booth in the convention center lobby. After hours, lost items can be turned in at the operation office at 208. Please do not smoke on the loading docks. Smoking on the docks may result in being asked to leave the center, and if you are in the appropriate smoking areas, please use your butt cans for the cigarette butts. We desperately need volunteers to work the merchandise room. I'm volunteering. Please visit convention information to volunteer. Set up for alternative merchandise will be set up at 7 a.m. Sunday. The alternative merchandise store will be open at 8 a.m. Sunday in Hall D registration. Okay. Let's start this meeting with the Serenity Prayer. Moment of silence. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things we cannot change, courage to change things we can, and the wisdom to know the difference. And I've asked Richie from Fort Lauderdale to read Who is an Addict?
I'm an addict named Ricky, and this is my first World Convention, by the way. Who is an addict? Most of us do not have to think twice about this question. We know. Our whole life and thinking were centered in drugs in one form or another, the getting and using and finding ways and means to get more. We live to use and use to live. Very simply, an addict is a man or woman whose life is controlled by drugs. We are people in the grip of a continuing and progressive illness whose ends are always the same: jails, institutions, and death.
I've asked Elise from Connecticut, from Berlin, Connecticut, to read what?
Hey, I'm Elisha. I'm an addict. What is a Narcotics Anonymous program? NA is a nonprofit fellowship or society of men and women for whom drugs have become a major problem. We are recovering addicts who meet regularly to help each other stay clean. This is a program of complete abstinence from all drugs. There is only one requirement for membership: the desire to stop using. We suggest that you keep an open mind and give yourself a break. Our program is a set of principles written so simply that we can follow them in our daily lives. The most important thing about them is that they work. There are no strings attached to NA. We are not affiliated with any other organizations. We have no initiation fees or dues, no pledges to sign, no promises to make to anyone. We are not connected with any political, religious, or law enforcement groups and are under no surveillance at any time. Anyone may join us regardless of age, race, sexual identity, creed, religion, or lack of religion. We are not interested in what or how much you use or who your connections were, what you have done in the past, how much or how little you have, but only in what you want to do about your problem and how we can help. The newcomer is the most important person at any meeting because we can only keep what we have by giving it away. We have learned from our group experience that those who keep coming to our meetings regularly stay clean.
And we've asked Ryan from Olympia to come read from the spiritual principle of the day.
Hello, my name's Ryan. I'm a grateful recovering addict from Olympia, Washington. So I got the spiritual principle of the day from February 10th. Each of us looks for a sponsor who does the deal. Trust a higher power, cleans house, and helps other addicts. We seek out experienced members who have what we want and will accept us without judgment. Most importantly, we look for sponsors who will offer loving guidance through the 12 steps of NA. Such love takes many forms. Some of us rely on our sponsors for an unbiased perspective on our thoughts and behaviors. Others appreciate being offered gentle guidance, tempered with loads of support and empathy. Whether our sponsors apply a firm hand or a soft touch, we learn to confide in them. Their acceptance of us, warts and all, helps us to accept that everything is as it should be. Working steps is a process of self-discovery. With a sponsor to hold the flashlight, our hands are free to dig deep. They help us figure out who we are and who we are not. As one member described it, this process taught me not to fear the truth about myself. It turns out that I'm not as good or as bad as I thought I was. We can learn a lot about recovery by talking to more experienced members. To find what's true for ourselves, however, it's helpful to have someone to question our ideas. As one member put it, instead of telling me what to do, my sponsor helped me figure out my own answers about who I am. We may aspire to be like our sponsors at first, but few sponsors are looking to mold a mini-me. Instead, they help us to be ourselves. Thank you.
All right. So just real quickly, because I'm from Washington, D.C., so I want to say welcome to Washington. And hopefully everyone's having a great convention. So now it's time to introduce the speakers. And we did rock, paper, scissors. And Elise from Connecticut is the first. So is that right? Yep. And so I will turn it over to her.
I'm Elise, I'm an addict. First, I want to thank the World Board, NAWS, all the staff members, volunteers for putting on this convention. There's been a lot of work behind the scenes putting this whole thing on, and I just want to, let's give them a round of applause. When I was called and asked if I'd be willing to share at the convention, the first thing that came to my mind was absolutely not. It was terrifying. I didn't want to do it, and the words that came out of my mouth were, it would be an honor and a privilege. And step work and sponsorship may have something to do with that, and so here we are. And I just was sitting on the couch, and I was looking, and like in the front row, I see my wife, my stepson, my sponsor's sponsor, and some sponsees. And like, it just made me feel like I've been sitting here with anxiety, my stomach's turning, and I look and I see those people, and it like almost brought me to tears. And I don't know. So I was asked to share on this reading, which is about step work and sponsorship. And before I get into that, I just want to say that anything I say here is not our literature. I'm not Narcotics Anonymous. Anything I say is not fact. I'm just here to share my experience. Some things I have done or I may have lived through may kill you. And we go to our literature and we can know what our program is through our literature. This is just my experience. Sometimes we complicate things. We like to tell people, you should do this. You should get a sponsor right away. You should ask one person. You shouldn't have more than one sponsor. And the truth is, like, we find everything we need to know in the literature. I'm not here to tell you anything other than what I have experienced. And last thing, because this is on my heart, is we are a reflection of Narcotics Anonymous. Right? Like things we do, the things we say, our behaviors, the way that we act, the outside world looks at Narcotics Anonymous. People know that we're here. They see us. They know all of us walking around the streets, are Narcotics Anonymous. So when we throw trash on the ground and we're screaming and yelling at staff members asking why our badge is this color or that color or why can't we do this, just remember that that's the impression they're left with Narcotics Anonymous is by our behavior. That was my little public service announcement. But seriously, right? Like, we want to make this a viable option. I want Narcotics Anonymous to be a place where somebody says, you need help, go there. Not, you need help, those people are ridiculous, they're disgusting, they don't change, they trashed our city, they left trash all over the place, they were screaming and swearing and yelling at us. I want people to know us that we were, like, loving, caring, giving hugs, helping people. And that's who we are. That's who we are as members of Narcotics Anonymous. So I got here in 2012, and I walked into a meeting, and it wasn't the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous, and I found another fellowship through Way of Treatment, and I was going in there, and I identified as an addict, and somebody came up to me and said, hey, you may be better fit to go to Narcotics Anonymous. And I was offended at first, right? Like, oh, you're gonna kick me out of here? And today, I thank God that person came up and said that to me, right? Our literature speaks to me. I don't need a dictionary most of the time to understand what's in it. It was like written by us, for us. I understand what I'm reading. It speaks to me. I come to a meeting. I can talk about more than just the drug because that's not what this is about. And people shake their heads and nod and can relate with what I'm saying. And so I came to Narcotics Anonymous, and I heard people talk about getting a sponsor, and like, this is an LGBTQ, might be, am I missing a letter? Plus, I'm sorry, I don't mean that to be offensive. There's letters that I don't, are added all the time, and like, whoever you are, whatever you are, like, you're here, I love you. And so I walked into my first NA meeting and I heard get a sponsor. And the only requirement that I had for sponsorship at that time was that I had to find a lesbian to sponsor me. And if you know anything about Connecticut at the time, I was living in Torrington, which is like this small little creepy woodsy town. And yeah, and there was one lesbian, right? And so she was gonna be my sponsor. That was the only requirement for me, right? Because that's all I saw of myself, was I was just a lesbian who was coming to Narcotics Anonymous, and that was the only thing that I thought I needed. And so I asked this woman to sponsor me, and she tells me I have to get a commitment, and that I'm gonna start doing step work. And so I sit down, I start writing step one, I get some commitments. And like I said, this is about the disease of addiction. It wasn't about the drug for me. So here I am attending meetings. I'm going to a meeting every day. I have a commitment at multiple meetings. I have a sponsor. I'm writing. But I've removed the drug from my life, and the step work wasn't happening fast enough. So I picked up the next best thing, right? Because I got here, and I hated myself, but I could not admit it. I couldn't even identify it. I had no idea that I did not like myself. And anything that made me feel good, or not even made me feel good, anything that made me not think about not liking myself just for a minute, I wanted. And so for me, it was finding women, right? And it's like almost like I had this thing that like being a lesbian in recovery, I thought my options were gonna be very limited. I was only gonna be able to find another girl that was willing to be with another girl who was okay with being with an addict. So like, I got scared. And so anything that presented itself, I wanted. Because like, was there gonna be another? And so I participated in this behavior of like finding ways and means to just get another until I ran myself right out of the room. I couldn't deal with myself. I couldn't deal with my behavior. There wasn't a meeting I couldn't have walked into that I didn't see one of my victims sitting in a seat. And so I made it real hard for me, for myself to recover. And so I went back out, I used for a little while, and those like yets that people talked about became agains. I started using new substances and new ways and means, and like things got really scary really fast for me. But I knew Narcotics Anonymous existed, right? Like I knew it was here, I had been here. I saw other people recovering, and I came running back with my tail between my legs. And so I came back, I went to treatment, and there was this woman who I'd become friendly with, and I tell this story all the time. This was my second time in treatment. My mom came to visit me, and she said, I'm sorry, I can't see or talk to you right now, because every time I look at you, I'm afraid it's the last time I'll see you. And I'll never forget her face with tears in her eyes. My mom got in her car and left the treatment center I was in. And the time before that, when I was in treatment, I swear my whole town was coming to visit me, right? My family was there every weekend. People were coming to visit me. And now all of a sudden, my mom said she couldn't see me anymore. And I felt so alone. And I was willing to do anything this time. I didn't want to watch my mom leave again. I didn't want to break her heart. I didn't want to be feeling that shame of sitting in treatment and not knowing how to stop. And so I called this woman, and she came to visit me in treatment, and I asked her to be my sponsor. And she said, I'm going to require some things of you, and if you want this relationship to work, like, you're going to have to do the work. And I said, I'm ready and I'm willing. And she said, you're going to do step work, you're going to do step work, you're going to get commitments, you're going to be of service, you're going to go to meetings. And I saw the way that she treated herself. I saw the way that she walked into a room with her head held high, which I didn't know how to do. I always was looking down. I watched the way that she, like, stayed after a meeting, and she was always taking newcomers out to breakfast or out to dinner and was giving out her phone numbers. And was talking to people and taking the time to invest in others' lives, which is something that I had no interest in doing. And so we started this journey, right? And I've not found a reason to pick up since June 5th of 2013, since I started this journey with my sponsor. This is a 12-step fellowship. Sitting here in a convention is only part of the things that I get to experience and do because of the 12 steps that I participate in writing and applying in my life. If meetings and conventions and all that stuff could keep me clean, like, wouldn't that be beautiful? That's not my story. I got a lot of issues, right? And so, like, step work has been the only thing that has been able to get me outside of that. And so I started writing, and it just, like, really hit me in that reading where it says, like, with a sponsor who holds the flashlight, we can dig deeper. Step work isn't something I can do by myself. It's something where I need my sponsor to help me with. Like, I can't spot. Sometimes I own things that aren't mine, or I'm not owning something that is mine. Like, I need somebody to guide me through what's going on, and I don't think my sponsor just holds the flashlight. Like, she jumps in that hole and digs with me when I don't know that I need to go deeper. And I thank God every day, like, thank God my sponsor was here when I got here. Because sometimes I look around and I'm like, who is left? Right? Like, after the pandemic, and you look around in the room, and sometimes, and most of the time, it's like, I have the most clean time in the room. Like, I feel empathetic towards newcomers walking in sometimes, because I often think, like, where are the women? And thank God my sponsor was here, and so we started to do some serious work together, and I looked at a lot of things. Like, I had a lot of anger. I had a lot of anger with my family members. I had a lot of anger with myself, and I was able to uncover, like, where that stuff was coming from. And growing up, like, I have two older brothers. My parents got divorced when I was in eighth grade. And I didn't have an awful childhood. I didn't have, like, you know, any crazy, crazy trauma. I didn't have, like, there was always food on the table. I had dirt bikes and snowmobiles, and I had the new Abercrombie and Hollister clothes going to school every year. And I never had to worry about where my next meal was coming from, what clothes I was gonna wear, anything like that. But what I'll tell you is, I played sports. I was a three-sport athlete. In every single game, I would look out, and I just wanted my dad to show up. just wanted my dad to be there. My dad would always be at my brother's football games. My brother was like the star quarterback of the football team. He'd be at my other brother's wrestling meet, who was like the state champion. And so like I felt like they were the best at the sports and my dad showed up for them, but why was it so hard for him to show up for me? So growing up, I had this feeling of not good enough. How do I make my dad love me? And through step work, I've come to uncover that my dad did the best he could. My dad is one of us, an addict. He's not a gay, but maybe he is. There's a lot of older white men who we just don't know. I totally forgot that I sent my dad the app with the live stream. Sorry, Dad. It's awkward. So I had a lot of anger with my father, right? There was a point in time where my dad went to treatment, and I remember my mom sitting us down. I was probably 8 years old. My dad was gone, and she let us know that my dad had a problem and he was away to get some help. And I remember going to visit him at this treatment center, and he said, "I gotta go, there's an NA meeting." And I said, "What's that?" And my dad said, "Nicotine Anonymous, I'm here to quit cigarettes." I didn't know. I thought that's why he was there. And so, like, I used to sit at my dad's feet. I used to beg him to be able to go to a meeting with him, because there was a period of time where my dad changed. He started to show up more. He started to have these, like, really good friends that were coming around. They would have pig roasts at our house in the backyard. And they were, like, good guys. And I knew when my dad was hanging around with these people that I got more of my dad. And so, like, I knew Narcotics Anonymous existed. I knew that you guys were here. I knew that something was happening here. And through step work, through sponsorship, and through uncovering a lot of that stuff, I have an amazing relationship with my father today. Like, before 2 years ago, I could count on one hand the number of times my father told me he loved me, or said, "I love you" back when I said, "I love you." And now, when I get off the phone with my dad, he tells me he loves me first. And 2 weekends ago, I got to take a road trip. My dad lives in West Virginia, to go see a new house that he built and spent the weekend with him. Without sitting there and digging deeper with my sponsor and looking at what my part was in this relationship and the anger that I was holding on to, like, my dad did the best that he could. He was one of us who was struggling with the disease of addiction and all of the self-doubt and all of the things that we struggle with without a program, and also trying to show up as a father. And so, like, I began to have some empathy for my father and understood that, like, he loved me in his own way. And when he bought me a dirt bike, that was his way of saying, "I love you." When he paid for my clothes for me to go back to school, like, that was his way of saying, "I love you." And so I realized that, like, my dad does love me, right? It wasn't the way I wanted him to love me. And I had this beautiful man my mom married that was my stepfather, who would show up in the most amazing ways, the most compassionate, vulnerable, intimate man. And I could not accept him, because all I wanted was that exact love from my dad, right? So digging a little deeper, like, now I get into owing some amends to my stepfather. I had all of this love standing right in front of me that I couldn't accept because it wasn't from the person I wanted it to be from. And the beautiful thing that is, through all of this, in Narcotics Anonymous, I got all of the love from you guys, right? Like, there was some, like they say, men with the men, women with the women. I got here and I was like, what the hell does that mean for me? And where do I go, right? And so, like, back to the whole sponsorship thing, like, my only requirement was another lesbian was going to be my sponsor. And after that sponsor, I said, "I need a man because my issue is woman. And I need a man to guide me through these issues." So I asked this guy to sponsor me. He looked like he was about to faint. He said, He's never had this happen before, but sure, it was an honor. Let's try it out. And so I remember there was this older woman. She was like 50 years old. She was running a bunch of sober houses in the area. And I started sleeping with her, and I remember calling him, and I'm like, hey, I got to let you know that this is what's going on. And he's like, oh, that's awesome. She's so hot. And I thought, this is not going to work, right? And what I realized is that despite my sexuality, despite who I am attracted to, despite who I lay down with at the end of the day, I am a woman in recovery, and the only person that is going to be able to guide this addict outside of myself is another woman, right? My sponsor is a straight woman. I've been able to share everything with her. Like it says, like, our sponsor is not a financial advisor. They're not a therapist. They're not a relationship counselor. But there is no area of my life that I have not invited this woman into. And it was my job to invite my sponsor into those areas. It was my job to build this relationship with this woman. It was my job to call her and let her know what was going on. It was my job to be honest in my step work and trust like her higher power, because I didn't have one when I got here. I didn't even understand what that was. All I knew was that my mom made me go to church, and I heard things about myself that like I was gonna go to a place that I didn't wanna go. And so, like, I thought God did not like me. And I got here, and you guys said, well, you can choose your own. Well, what does that mean, right? Like, what do you mean I could choose my own? And the beautiful thing is that, like, through Stepwork introduced me to my higher power. Stepwork introduced me into a God of my own understanding. And the more I apply steps in my life, the closer I get to that connection. And anytime I choose to live on the wrong side of a step, I'm moving further away from my relationship with my God. When I'm judging somebody, when I'm angry, when I'm not like living that I'm powerless, when I'm doing these things that aren't applying the steps into my life, I go further and further away from that connection, and it's easier for me to fall back into those things that make me feel good about myself and that aren't productive to recovery. And so I talked about just looking for my dad at all my sporting events. And I got to tell you what, my mom was at every single game, always. My mom never missed a game. And I couldn't look and be happy and grateful that my mom was there. I couldn't have like this thought like, oh, my mom is here, because all I could focus on was my dad wasn't. And like that was me as an addict, was never looking at what I did have and always worrying about what I don't have. And so when I got clean, I knew, or I thought, I had nothing to offer. And so all I would do was offer anything to you just to like me, right? Like my sponsor has this joke where she like says, like I used to, like I have a friend who has a boat. I didn't have a friend who had a boat. But you wanted to go fishing and you wanted to go on a boat. Oh, I had a friend that had a boat, right? Like you didn't have a car and you had somewhere to be. Here's my keys. Take my car. You didn't have any clothes that fit you. I was going to the mall and I was buying you new clothes. You were hungry. We were going to dinner. I was paying. You needed something. I had you. And not because of the way, like today I do things because I like to do things for people, because I like to be generous and it makes me, doesn't even make me feel good. Sometimes it's just the right thing to do. But back then, I wasn't doing it because it was the right thing to do. I was doing it because I thought all I had to offer was something monetary to you. I thought that like the only way to make you like me was to give you something. Something material, something physical. If I gave you my car because you needed to get somewhere, then like you were gonna like me. Like Elise was gonna be cool because like, hey, this chick let me use her car. Today, you're not taking my car. I'll give you a ride, or I'll help you get your life in order to figure out how to get yourself a car. But today I could just show up as me. And I could tell you I know how to set boundaries today because of sponsorship and step work. I don't know why I keep struggling with that word. Because of sponsorship and step work, I can set boundaries today and say, like, I don't have space right now to hold for you. I have a lot on my plate, I have a lot going on, and all I have to offer right now is I have 5 minutes and you know, I can have a conversation with you. Today, I don't have to make you like me with anything other than myself and what I have available to offer you at the moment. Today, me standing here just as I am, I'm enough. And if you don't like me, that's okay. I spent so many years just trying to make somebody love me. Just trying to have somebody, because I thought that if you loved me, then maybe I could love myself. And what happened through step work was I began to like myself. Sometimes I love myself, I'm not gonna lie. I'm an addict, I have defects, I have insecurities, and I don't wake up loving myself every day. Like, that is an ongoing job, that's an ongoing moment by moment thing. I have a minute and 30 seconds to wrap this up. Gives me anxiety. And so I got into these relationships where in the beginning my only requirement was that you liked me. And then my only requirement was that you were a lesbian, because there was a lot of them along the way that did not identify as one of us, right? And all that caused was heartbreak, pain. It was gonna be nothing more than a week before they realized that they could not be with a woman. And so in 1 minute, I'm gonna tell you that my next requirement was, yeah, you had to be a lesbian, and that was the only requirement which left me staying in relationships far past their expiration date and left me staying in a place where I began to not like myself anymore because I was so uncomfortable and I couldn't come up with the courage to express my needs and just walk away. And so I kept doing step work and I kept having these Zoom calls during COVID with my sponsor and going through our literature and figuring out exactly where it was. And so I got the courage to leave this relationship, and in 28 seconds, I'm gonna tell you the next thing that showed up was a woman who loves me unconditionally, who listens to my needs, who expresses hers, who is there for me, right? We have this this relationship where we can share openly and honestly with one another. And she just put a ring on my finger. We got married in June. Because of step work, and at that wedding, my sponsor was there standing by my side. My time has gone off, so I am gonna wrap up with this. I love you guys, thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, and great job. I did make a little mistake about the town she's from. It's Berlin instead of Berlin, although it's spelled Berlin. The next person is here to speak with us. When I first met him, he said his name is Venti. And I was like, what? Like Venti coffee? And it's Ben T. So I want to introduce Ben T from Lebo, Kansas. Thank you.
I'm Ben T, and I'm an addict. First of all, I'd like to take a moment and thank the convention committee and everyone behind the scenes for allowing me to share my experience, strength, and hope. Thank you for all of you being here. If you're like me, this is my first convention. Welcome. I hope you hear something and feel something that you need to take home with you and keep you coming back. I, too, am very well blessed to have a huge support system here today. I've got part of my sponsorship tree here. I've got a lot of regional home members here with me from Kansas. Best home, best region of America, Mid-America. Thank you so much. These people that I'm here with are not just part members of my fellowship. A lot of them are part of my inner circle. And today, I say this today, a lot of them know the authentic Ben. It wasn't that way when I first got here. I came through to NA through another fellowship. I stopped using through another fellowship. I was kind of forced for the third time through treatment to attend meetings. The first two times, they didn't really require you to go to meetings. They just kind of said, it's a suggestion. You have to attend one, get your card stamped, and go. This next facility I went to required you to go at least twice a week. I was far behind, and I had a quick weekend to get him caught up. And I found recovery at that point in time. Thought it was going to be a little bit of something I had to do, so I did it. Next suggestion was that I should get a sponsor. Okay. I came up with a list of people that I wanted for a sponsor. I was denied. My first sponsor had a little circumstances going around, what if there was a good idea to be a sponsor or not. So I ended up choosing somebody else to be my sponsor, an old boy that I know from my hometown, with reservations, because I knew about the fourth step. And I'm not exactly straight, so, and he was. And so the reservation was coming up, and we were just hanging out, talking, doing that stuff. And so I finally went back to my provider, and I said, you know, this is not going to work for me. I really need a different sponsor. Why can't I have Jason? Well, at that point in time, things had kind of gotten cleared out, and I was approved to have my sponsor that I had chose. Because I had sat in meetings with this man. I liked what he had to say. I want what he had, and I wanted to know more about it. It spoke to me. So I asked Jason to, you know, if I could go have coffee and we can have, you know, talk about being a sponsor. He goes, yeah, sure. So we go to the local coffee house, and we get our cups of coffees and sit down. And I said, well, before we get going, I want you to know one thing. I'm openly gay. And he looked at me, he goes, I want you to know one thing. I'm openly straight. He goes, if that works for you, that works for me. So we start off doing our steps. Amazing. If you're like me, you always knew that you wanted to give something out to somebody else and that you only wanted something for somebody. So the first time in my life, I got on my knees with another man, and it was the most spiritual thing in my life, and he didn't want nothing from me and nor required anything from me or want anything to me. Was the third step when I worked with Jason. And I told him about that when it was all over with. I said, that's amazing. I've never been on my knees with another man. This was, you know, nothing ever happened. You know, and I actually feel loved after this is all over with. So we move on to the fourth step, and he goes, well, okay, let's start doing the fourth step. I said, this won't take long. I'm not resentful. This won't take long at all. Four pages later, front and back, we get to it. I did disclose a few things in my fourth step that were just not ready to share yet, is how I put it. And I wasn't. Because I hadn't had 100% of that trust yet with the sponsor that I chose. I wasn't comfortable with myself yet. Because I didn't love myself. So, now we'll go back for a few seconds. I'm the oldest child of four, born into a normie family, as normal as anybody can be, besides a washing machine setting. Mom and dad divorced when I was two. Mom got remarried when I was five. I was the perfect picture, like at least like my cohort panelists here. I didn't worry about where the food was coming from, didn't worry about clothes, didn't worry about anything. And in my household, drugs and alcohol were not a normal thing in my household by any means. My stepdad occasionally might have a drink, my mom would hardly never have a drink, and my dad, as far as I know, have never seen him take a drink, nor my grandparents. But everything was okay. We were a picture-perfect family. So this is where I throw in the 3-second blurb that I was sexually molested from the time I was 4 years old until I was 10 years old, and I move on past it. Because that's what I've always done before in the past, and I shared about it. But we'll come back to that here in a little bit. So it's a 3-second blurb, once again. That's okay, because I'm good with that today. I forgave my abuser. To their face, and genuinely meant it. And that person was still a part of my life throughout all my life. Moving through the steps, I get through. And I get to step 11. Work through it. Work through step 12. Getting ready to get my step 12, and I realize that there's something wrong. I didn't feel good. And there's a little paper that showed up in my house on the mail one day. I opened it up and it said, "Oh yeah, you're going to be relieved from the court systems." Okay. It still didn't make me feel good. Well, see, back on day 60, I had a little confrontation, not a confrontation, but I was so excited for 60 days clean, something I had never accomplished before. Never. 28 relapse, 29 relapse, you know, that's what I did. I didn't think that 30 days was worth it. I called my dad, super excited. My dad says, "And?" That's something that people do every day. What's so special about that? Well, the married guy that I was seeing at the point in time called me, wanted me to come and pick him up, so I did. He goes, "Hey, can we stop by Casey's? I need a beer and some cigarettes." I'm like, "Yeah, sure. Hell, I even bought them." So we're sitting there in the middle of the living room dancing. I just grabbed that beer out of his hand, two big swigs back, and that was my relapse. Wasn't even worth it. You didn't feel nothing from it, seriously. But I came back to all of you and said, my last drunk was, because I could be honest, August 15th of 2011. Now I'm sharing the meeting with my sponsor for the 12th step. I said, "Yeah, we need to have a conversation." I said, "Back in day 60, I relapsed. We need a reset." Well, I was also at almost pushing my 1-year mark at this point in time also, according to what he knew of and what all of you knew at that point in time, that was my 1-year mark coming up. So I reset my clean time. And I became honest. I went back, and I came honest with all of you. By this point in time, I had really gotten involved in the other fellowship. I was hanging out with a friend of mine on a regular basis. another awesome person, and she knew all of you. She'd been in this program once before and had relapsed, and she was very active in service, and she had relapsed and was coming back, and she was kind of working at this point in time, and she was in the Wedlow Fellowship, and we hung out daily in between meetings and became a very good friend of mine. So one thing I missed was that my cousin was one of us. My cousin, unbeknownst to me, relapsed. Called me one day. I knew who he was. I didn't want anything to do with it because I wasn't ready. Slide bar over and ignored the call. That evening, he committed suicide. So this one day, I was having a hard time with this. And I went to the cemetery, talked to my cousin, and told him about what was going on in my life. And I looked at my friend, and she goes, "You know, there's this other meeting. Why don't you come with me to Pioneer Group?" It was a Sunday evening meeting, so it was early. It was 7 o'clock, and I went there. Pioneer meeting from Narcotics Anonymous in Emporia, Kansas. The eyes opened me with open arms and hugged me like I'd never been hugged before in my life. And at that moment, I knew I was truly home. In my household, we grew up and we'd find grandma first and we'd give grandma a hug. So hugs was something that was very important to me. And they were true hugs, you know, that's what you did. So those hugs that you guys gave me remind me of home. So that's what it became for me. And so I started my process at that point in time of switching over. With working the steps with my sponsor, maintaining for a while, and then I realized it's not working for me no more over there. I'm liking the NA a whole lot better, and I want to be more a part of. Well, I kind of took a service position over there, so I kind of had to give it up, which I did willingly, so I could become a service here. And with that, I have always been of service. Moving on through, I end up working through my sponsor. We're doing the steps, we're doing that, you know, and we've gotten through them. Most life-changing experience in my life. If you haven't done them, please do them, because it clears the wreckage of your life out of there. And I today can look at myself in the mirror and say, "I love you," which wasn't something I could say when I got here. I actually had to write it on the mirror in front of me and said, "I was deserving of love. I'm deserving of God's love, and I can love myself." And I had to recite those self to myself without looking away, which was something I couldn't do. Because there's a such thing as gay shame. You could be ashamed of being gay. And that's who I was. I was ashamed to be me. But through the steps, I learned who I was, and I became okay with who I was. Now, like I said, I've become really part of members, and I have switched memberships at this point in time. There's a little story I need to tell you. I go to the spiritual retreat called Soul to Soul, the second best home group of the world. It's a spiritual retreat of Mid-America region, and I go there, and it is this in this Indian spiritual, Muncie Indian spiritual burial site out there, and it's a big church resort campsite for them. And so we go out there every year, and this is the first time I attend. I'm about 3 years in, and it's coming up to the end of the day and end of the weekend, and a very good friend of mine, she looks at me and she goes, "So Ben," she has me quartered, she goes, "You need to make a choice. You need to get either get on or get off." Well, I took that and I ran with it. When it came time for voting new members of the board for that time, I raised my hand for a regional a regional position, which happened to be soul-to-soul chair, which I've never chaired anything in my life, but I became a regional member of the subcommittee at this point in time for the first time. And that's where I became a member of Mid-America Region at that point in time and started service work there. So I took it literally. I got on, and I have rode that ride ever since. I told you day 60 I relapsed. That was October 15th of 2011, and I have been clean ever since. At the same point in time, I'd done about another year or so, and I realized my sponsor and I weren't working together no more. I had outgrown him. He no longer had what I wanted. Don't get me wrong. Still a great inspirational man. He is a great member of the community of recovery in Kansas, throughout the state of Kansas, period. He is an awesome person, and I love him dearly. But he no longer had what I wanted. I knew what I wanted at this point in time. I seen it, and I wanted more of it. And it was to be of service to Narcotics Anonymous. So I was already looking at other sponsors at this point in time. I was looking at men in my home group, and I was seeing who was being of service. And I already had my mindset. I chose my sponsor. He asked me to make sure that I let my other sponsor know that he no longer had to be waiting for my phone calls in the middle of the night and answer that phone call anymore. And I did. I had a face-to-face meeting with Jason, and we sat down and we had that conversation. And I had got my new sponsor. This sponsor was who I wanted. It's someone that I aspired to be. Not the mini-me. Trust me, I didn't want to be a mini-me. But he had and knew what I wanted to do. He was a service at all levels of Narcotics Anonymous, from the highest to the lowest. And I wanted to be able to do that. I wanted what he had, because he was also accused of being maybe a little bit of a Nazi and a purist, and that's all right. I wanted that. And so we sat down the first time and started talking. I love this man with all my heart. I loved him before I used to ask to be my sponsor. I trusted this man. This was the first time I had ever told another member of Narcotics Anonymous that I was HIV positive. This is the only second time I've ever shared it openly. And he knew from the beginning and kept that. Now through the steps, I have learned not to be ashamed no more. Through the steps, I learned that it's okay to be me. Through sponsorship, I learned how to be a better sponsor. Because he didn't believe in chasing me down and giving me phone calls. Because I did about 3-year stint that I was not anywhere around. And I wasn't attending meetings on a regular basis, which I highly don't recommend. The only time I showed up for meetings was every quarter for regional service. That was the only meeting I was getting, and I was sick. I moved back home to Emporia, Kansas at that point in time, and that first probably month and a half, I sat in those meetings and I cried because I was a newcomer again, or I felt that way because I was that sick of not being in meetings and not being of service on the levels that I needed to be, and not being around you guys on the regular basis. Crazy little thing is that I moved back to Emporia, Kansas, because I wanted to get out of there so fast, because I mean, Emporia, Kansas is about 27,000 people, and I was a big fish in a little pond, and there wasn't many of us in Emporia, Kansas. My home group, I was the only gay guy that I knew of, and there was none of us around to be able to ask in Emporia, Kansas. And if I had, I already slept with everybody anyway, so I was okay. But none of us was in the rooms. So for me to look for faces like me in those rooms didn't exist. But I was still okay with that. I knew a female wouldn't work for me because a female couldn't understand where I came from, my sexual deviancies. Couldn't understand those. But a man could. Those desires, those needs, and all that stuff. I knew that. So that's why I've always looked for another man to be my sponsor. After I got done, I became sponsoring. The first couple sponsors, you know, we had the drug court system in the Emporia area. And so I had a couple sponsors at different points in time as, you know, and I would pick them up, I'd give them rides, I would give them $10 so they could get lunch, you know. I was that one sponsor here that we shouldn't be. Thinking, and I took it hard when they relapsed. People looked at me and said, "It's not your fault. Are you still clean?" "Yeah." "Did you go out and do anything about it?" "No." "Okay." That's what they do. That's what we do. We're addicts. We relapse. We get on ourselves and we go. Okay. My sponsor believes in not chasing. He'll give you a call. When those 3 years, he called me occasionally. "Hey, what's going on?" And then I think he secretly got some of my sponsor's brothers to give me calls too from time to time, because occasionally I'd have a couple of them would call me out of the blue, saying, "Hey, what's going on? I haven't heard from you for a while." So when I moved back to Emporia, Kansas, after being gone for 3 years, in the big city of Kansas City area, I started working back again. I got the opportunity to move back home, be with my grandfather, because he asked me to come home. He was 94 years old at the point in time and had cancer. So I came home with my job that I had, and I was able to be there when he passed away, in the room with him. One of the amazing, he is the only one of my grandparents that had ever seen me clean. And all of my grandparents begged for me to stop using. And so I got to be there because of you guys. I was able to be available there for him when he passed away. Met this man. Supposed to be a weekend honeymoon on one of the apps. We decided to go out. I did something strange. I called my sponsor about him. And he called his sponsor, which is odd, because neither one of us ever done this before. He had a problem with labels. Neither one of us wanted relationships. And so that's all it was for about a year. And then I finally looked at him and I said, "You know, you need to get on or get off, because I'm not going to stick around forever, so I'm looking for full-time. And if you only be part-time, it's not going to work for me." He finally made the decision, and we got married in July of 2020. He, too, is a member of Recovery, of the other program, but he's also a member of the Naranon community also, which is highly recommended, and his sponsor married us. So sponsorship in my family is very important, and it is important to all of you, so hopefully you do. Thank you for letting me be of service. Love you all.
Let's thank the speakers, Elise and Ben. And now we've asked someone to read. I've asked Madi to come out from Tamarack to read We Do Recover.
Hi, family. My name is Mari, and I am an addict. Hi. We do recover. When at the end of the road we find that we can no longer function as a human being, either with or without drugs, we all face the same dilemma. What is there left to do? There seems this alternative: either go on as best as we can to the bitter ends, jails, institutions, or death, or find a new way to live. In years gone by, very few addicts ever had this last choice. Those who are addicted today are more fortunate. For the first time in man's entire history, a simple way has been proven itself in the lives of many addicts. It is available to us all. It is a simple, spiritual, not religious program known as Narcotics Anonymous.
Lord, you give some people mics and you never know what you're gonna get. Anyways, let's close this meeting with the third step prayer. Take your will in your life, guide me in my recovery, show me how to live. Y'all have a great convention.